For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It's the SNL Hall of Fame Podcast with your host, Jamie Dew, Chief Librarian Thomas Senna, and featuring Matt Ardill. And now, Curator of the Hall, Jamie Dew.
All right. Thank you, Doug DeNance. It is fantastic to be here inside the SNL Hall of Fame. Now, before you come in, please wipe your feet. The SNL Hall of Fame podcast is a weekly affair. Each episode, we take a deep dive into the career of a former cast member, host, musical guest, or writer, and add them to the ballot for your consideration. Once the nominees have been announced, we turn to you, the listener, to vote for the most deserving and help determine who will be enshrined for perpetuity inside the hall. I am excited this week. We are talking about host Buck Henry, and this should be a fantastic episode as Thomas Senna is joined by John Schneider from the SNN, and I think it's going to be a great deal of fun. But before we get into that fun, let's get up to some other fun with our friend Matt Ardill. How's it going, Matt?
Hey, Jimmy. Great, great. I'm looking forward to speaking about the ever-present Buck Henry.
Oh, yes.
He is an amazing talent. A lot of people don't realize how influential he was on early comedy and film. We know he hosted a bunch at the start. But he actually really began his career working with Steve Allen on the new Steve Allen show. He has two producer credits, 30 writer credits, and 62 acting credits with a new film coming out in 2023. He's still going. He's still going.
Hasn't he passed?
Well, I guess it's a posthumous thing. But it's his latest credit is still coming out. But
wow, this guy works.
He works from beyond. To name a few of his films, he's worked on Catch-22, The Owl and the Pussycat, Defending Your Life, The Player, Shortcuts, What's Up Doc. He also worked on Heaven Can Wait, which he co-directed and received an Oscar nomination for. He is one of three people three sets of directors, along with the Coen brothers for No Country for Old Men and Robert Weiss and Jerome Robbins for West Side Story, to receive co-directing nominations. They generally try to avoid that with the Oscars. His work in Catch-22 was heavily inspired by his father, who was a brigadier general in the Air Force, which kind of explains how he and Mel Brooks sort of co-created Get Smart. You don't grow up around that kind of military silliness without some of it rubbing off. And he received an Emmy nomination for his writing in a comedy series for that, along
for
with
Get Smart?
Mel Brooks. Yeah, for Get Smart.
Oh, cool.
He also co-wrote The Graduate with Mike Nichols, who is improv royalty. He and Elaine May are two of the pioneers of modern improv, very fundamental in the creation of Second City. So he's got connections to SNL in sort of weird tangential ways that aren't immediately obvious, but it kind of explains how you really got it, because I doubt you could work with Mike Nichols without getting improv. And he is famously quoted about George W. Bush as saying, "We need a president who's fluent in at least one language." So, he is a smart aleck and super smart and incredibly funny with some great talent, great credits to his name.
That's Buck Henry.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Matt. Let's now kick it downstairs to our friend Thomas Senna, who is in conversation today with SNN's John Schneider to talk about Buck Henry.
So I wanted to start off, John, since we are both kind of SNL fans of a similar generation. Neither of us were even alive when Buck Henry hosted the show as many times as he did. So how does an SNL fan like you, who's of this generation, get into Buck Henry to even begin with?
When I rewatched the show, the entire series, for the first time, I genuinely had no idea who Buck Henry was, and I don't think a lot of people, even like modern younger SNL fans, would hear the name Buck Henry, and they probably would have no idea who this guy is, because I think he's in a way been lost to time. But through my rewatch, I was utterly amazed about how this legendary SNL host, you know, came to be, and how big of a name and impact he had on the original cast. It was incredible to get to watch him, and I'm so excited today to get to talk about him.
Yeah, so Buck Henry, so his background, you alluded to the fact that maybe even back then he wasn't really well-known. So his background, screenwriter, director, occasional actor. He wrote The Graduate. I think that's probably what he is most known for, especially before his first hosting stint. He co-wrote The Graduate. Then he co-wrote like Catch-22, Heaven Can Wait. But it's interesting to me that he wasn't real famous even back then. He was just a screenwriter and occasional director and actor. But even back then, Buck Henry wasn't real famous. So, you know, as a viewer, even now, something like that, would that kind of throw you off even now if say it's just some random kind of screenwriter for a highly acclaimed movie was tabbed to host the show? Like, how would you view it nowadays if somebody who isn't that well known got tabbed to host the show?
Well, first of all, I would love it. I think that's what the fun of it is, right? SNL is, you know, a star-making show. I think that can apply both to the cast who would then end up going off and creating these, you know, major motion pictures or being in these serialized television shows, and they get, you know, become huge names. But that's can apply for hosts as well. I think that a lot of people, probably the more casual fans, have no idea of some of the names of the hosts. Like, they'll pop up and they'll say, like, next week, and it is somebody that they've never heard of before. Yeah. And they learn and they get to know them. And the thing about Buck Henry specifically is they got to know him a lot if you were watching in the 70s. I mean, this is a guy who hosted 10 times between 1976 and 1980. And he became such good friends with the original cast that if you were watching in the 70s at any point, you had to know who Buck Henry was. Because to me, he was always the, you know, like the eighth cast member of the show in a way.
He definitely was. I always viewed him as, even rewatching now, as definitely like an honorary cast member, and even kind of a honorary producer in a way. Because I don't know about you, but I think sometimes SNL uses the term host kind of loosely. In a lot of ways, the hosts tend to just kind of do their monologue, and then it almost seems like they get whisked away by the show. So they're almost at the kind of the show's whim. But Buck Henry really seemed like somebody who had control while he was hosting, definitely. So it was almost like he was a producer. He was almost like Lorne's kind of kind of right-hand man of Lorne's in a way when he hosted.
I think he was like the MC, basically. Like, that's, you know, he was leading the evening and he was taking you from sketch to sketch and, you know, throughout some of his episodes. You know, even just his stage presence from the first time you saw him on the show, like, it wasn't over the top. There's a lot of comparisons that I'm sure we're going to talk about this throughout the show today between him and Steve Martin in the, you know, first 5 years. Those were like the two main hosts that really made an impact early on. But with Steve, he is over the top, and in his jokes, he's eccentric in what he's doing. Buck Henry is a little bit more subtle, but he commands the room in that way, and I think that is something that is very rare to find in great SNL hosts. That's why I think he's so unique and so special in terms of what he does.
Yeah, it really seemed like he got the show, and he knew how to play a straight man to other people's kind of more wild characters. And that's something, you know, in comedy, that's a comedic instinct in and of itself, is to know how to play the straight man. A lot of hosts that we see, in my opinion, the show needs to really revolve around them and have their character type be the main focus of the show. But I think you're right, like Buck Henry can lay back and be that foil for a more dynamic character. And that kind of leads into like his first hosting stint, January 17th, 1976. Right away, we see him with a great monologue. This is going to be a theme with the monologues. You know, he acknowledged that he was an unusual choice to host the show, given that maybe nobody knew who he was.
Now, you're probably wondering, as I am wondering, why I have been chosen to host tonight's show. After all, it's quite true, I'm not a comic. I don't sing, I don't dance. Sure, I've acted in a few films, a few television shows, I've written a few, but those aren't ordinarily the prerequisites to fronting a big show like this one.
Viewers now might watch older shows that Buck Henry hosted and say, who the hell is that? But he acknowledged that viewers then watched him hosting and thought it was an unusual choice. So I think that was, you know, him addressing almost the elephant in the room and kind of poking fun at himself. And I think he set the table really well with that monologue.
And this spoke to me. This is something that if you have ever heard me talk about Saturday Night Live, I always say, I love it when SNL goes meta. And Buck episodes were meta because he was there and then you got to see, it was all a big joke, but you got to see the perspective of the producer saying, we never really wanted Buck Henry to host to begin with, but now that he's here and anytime he would say something, this other subtitle would pop up on screen throughout the monologue. And I loved every minute of it. I genuinely, you know, when I was doing my rewatch, I tried not to spoil myself on anything. You know, this was years and years ago, but I was, you know, going through it and I didn't want to know anything. So for me, like Buck Henry pops up the first time and I was like, oh, that was really great. Like, he's awesome. Like, I didn't know that he was going to keep coming back and hosting, but every single time I saw that he was, you know, at the end of the episode, at the time, Don Pardo would announce at the end of the episode who was going to be hosting the next week, or sometimes even they would have the host for the next week pop up between sketches and say, hey, I'm Buck Henry and I'm going to be hosting SNL next week. And when that would happen, I would be so pumped up. I would be like, yes, I cannot wait to see Buck Henry back on the show.
Yeah. And you could tell, I think, with a host's first gig, if they're willing to play with the cast and kind of poke fun at themselves in a way, and if they get the show. And that seems evident, I think, in a host's kind of first hosting gig to me, which it did with Buck Henry. I talked about that he seemed like a host who was a good straight man, who was a good maybe foil for some of the outlandish characters. We saw that in the first episode with the samurai, which is a very popular John Belushi character. Everybody knows the samurai. But what a lot of people may not realize is that most of the samurai's appearances were with Buck Henry. And so when you first saw the samurai and especially his interplay with Buck Henry, like, what did you think of those samurai sketches?
Well, I always enjoyed them. I always felt like the samurai sketches worked best with Buck because it was almost like Buck was the secondary character that really understood the samurai. And I guess you can see that with some of the other hosts, but like, it really felt like Buck Henry understood what John Belushi was saying as the samurai in a way that nobody else could.
Frankly, as Dean of Monroe College, I cannot in good conscience permit you to receive a degree from our school.
Oh?
Yeah.
Absolutely
not. I've heard the explanations. I've heard the excuses. I know you had mono. That's no excuse. Listen, I've dealt with your kind for quite a long time. You're all fun and games. That's all you seem to care about. All right, you're still not convinced? Let's look at the record. As good old Calvin Coolidge said... Oh, you're right. It was Al Smith that said that.
And that's what was fun about it, was this like interplay back and forth between John Belushi, who is literally as crazy as you can get among all the cast members ever. I mean, he is just like a ball of energy on stage. And that's why some people love Belushi. But Buck plays it so straight that it's so fun to see the contrast of John Belushi yelling as the samurai and then Buck being like, I understand what you're saying, and then keeping the conversation going. And of course, I'm sure we're going to get to, there's this really famous moment between the samurai stockbroker and Buck Henry.
And it's pretty interesting that you say that Buck Henry understood what the samurai was saying, which is true, but we say saying in quotes because the samurai never really formed words or sentences or anything, but Belushi did a great job.
Thomas, I just think you didn't understand what he was saying. That's all it was.
I just didn't speak samurai. I think you're right. Belushi was an amazing, like almost like a Charlie Chaplin-esque kind of figure in those sketches. He did so much physical acting and with facial expressions. It reminded me a lot of Chaplin when Belushi would do those samurai sketches. And Buck Henry was the perfect person to play with that samurai character. He was a great foil for the samurai character. Of course, samurai, part of the thing is he had different jobs and things like that. And so Buck Henry was always really good about being like the straight man foil to whatever job or whatever thing that the samurai was doing. So I think you make solid points, definitely. So that was a great debut. Buck Henry established himself as somebody that the show could trust. He came back that same season, and this is obviously going to be a theme. He came back that same season toward the end of the year, and there was another monologue. It was May 22nd, 1976, and he did another pretty elaborate monologue, actually, this time getting Lorne Michaels involved, where he and Lorne were arguing with NBC security, so they about letting Buck Henry up to the show. So they really definitely played up that who the hell is Buck Henry, you're not a famous person kind of thing. Do you have any memories of that?
Well, I just think that, you know, having somebody come to, you know, the end of the season, it wasn't really the finale of the show. It was like the finale of season one. It was like the pseudo season one finale because they had those like two summer shows that I don't know at the time if they knew were going to be happening. But just having him there, I remember being like, okay, it's a really big deal to host a season finale. I always say the biggest eyeballs are on the show, on the premieres, the Christmas show, and the finales. Those are like the main shows that, you know, people beyond just the regulars who watch every week, they'll watch those particular shows. And at the time, obviously in the first season, you're establishing yourself with Buck Henry. I think it was just a really big episode for him. And I could just see, you know, he was just so comfortable there to be there, you know, throughout that episode. I was really impressed. You know, we started to see some of that backstage stuff that you refer to in the monologue where you saw most of the cast members in that. We obviously had him with the samurai as well. Yeah, so this is a really good episode. I'm just looking through the sketches from it. And he also did another film with Gary Weiss, which is another aspect of Buck Henry that I think gets not talked about very often. But this was a guy who was in everything. You want to hear something funny that another thing, Thomas, that we didn't even bring up, but from the first episode earlier on, the first time you hosted, I think it was season one, episode 10, Buck Henry's the first ever host of SNL to appear on Weekend Update.
Oh, really?
So
yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah. Now that you say what was, refresh my memory. What did he do on Weekend Update?
I think he did something with Jane. I don't remember exactly what sorry, listeners who are yelling at us, but basically I don't remember exactly what it was, but I do know that he was on Weekend Update that day. And I remember just like being so impressed that he was doing all these different aspects of the show. And then you see it when he's in these Gary Weiss films and all this stuff. So I guess my point is that, like, you know, we are here to make a case for the Hall of Fame as we go through these things. And like you starting to see, even through the first two times that he's hosting, he's a Swiss Army knife. He can do basically anything.
Exactly. And that tells me that he right away, he understood the show. he knew that it was just more than the sketches that were tailored around him, like maybe some other host. He knew that he could have an impact in what were the original pre-tapes. I think in Weekend Update, he actually did some sort of commentary, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he was kind of flirting with Jane a little bit.
Right.
On Weekend Update, yeah. So I think it's just that's part of him, what we were talking about, of him just kind of getting the show. And you're right, makes the Hall of Fame case for Buck right away. And we don't see that. He's about, I don't know, 20% into his hosting career. And he's already kind of in sports terms, putting up Hall of Fame numbers right away. So related to this second episode that he hosted, I actually wanted to play a little game with you. It's a game that's sweeping the nation. Three truths and a lie. I'm sure you understand the format. I don't know if people usually play two truths and a lie, but we're using three truths and a lie because
our game's better.
Three is one more. It's one more than two. So he had a sketch in his second hosting stint called Talk Back, where he played a television talk show host who was trying to compel people to call in, so he would throw out topics.
Good evening. I'm Frank Noland, and this is Talk Back.
Talk Back. Frank Noland talks to you, the public. You, the public, talk to Frank Noland. He listens. Talk back to Frank Noland, and he'll talk back to you.
So the topics kind of started getting crazier and crazier. So I'm going to list four topics that Buck Henry, as Frank Noland in that sketch, threw out. Three of them are real topics that he proposed, and one of them isn't. So you have to tell me which one was not a topic that he threw out. Okay.
Got it.
So first one, federally supported municipal bonds, yes or no. Soviet communism, let's give it a chance. The Beatles, terrible musicians. Or the ozone layer, let's get rid of it.
Interesting. Okay. Give me them one more time.
Okay. So the topics that Frank Noland, Buck Henry as Frank Noland, threw out in the talkback sketch. So federally supported municipal bonds, yes or no. Soviet communism, let's give it a chance. The Beatles, terrible musicians. Or the ozone layer, let's get rid of it.
I'm going to say that the lie is the Beatles, because there is a lot of history with SNL and the Beatles. I know that a lot of them grew up and loved it. There was also the invitation for the Beatles to come onto the show in 1976, prior to this episode. I doubt that there would be any sketch that would say Beatles, terrible music. So that would be the lie.
Yes, that is the lie. You're right. And that's a very astute SNL nerd kind of answer to it, to attach it to what was going on in the show at the time. But you're absolutely right. Frank Noland did not throw out the topic, the Beatles, terrible musicians, which I made that up, but I actually, for the record, think the Beatles were great musicians. So let's just not put my music fandom into question. I think the Beatles were great musicians.
Yeah, and the Beatles song was Get Back, not Talk Back.
Exactly. And I bring that sketch up, actually. I want, I think that's an example of Buck being able to carry a sketch by himself. Because I think Gilda appeared just at the tail end of that sketch, but it was just Buck sitting there with a bunch of phones laid out in front of him and carrying the entire sketch by himself. So there was great escalation in that sketch, and we talked about how Buck played well with the cast and let the cast shine. But I think this was an example of his growth in the second episode that we saw, where Buck actually carried the sketch.
I agree completely. Yeah, I was just, every time I saw him, I thought he got better and better. I think he's one of the ultimate SNL hosts. So yeah. For me, it'll be just to watch his progression is very fun.
Yeah, he's amazing. So moving on, and there was a very famous incident in the third episode that he hosted, and I'll kind of give you the floor to kind of talk about this. It was the Samurai Stockbroker sketch, and just kind of remind all of us kind of what happened there with that sketch.
Okay, so this is one of the all-time moments, I think, in the first 5 years of the show, where we get Buck Henry's character, Mr. Dantley, who is a recurring character in these sketches, goes to see his stockbroker, who is the samurai stockbroker played by John Belushi. And at one point, John Belushi is swinging his sword as he's kind of like looking out the window, and he swings it back behind his shoulder and cuts Buck Henry, literally, not as part of the sketch, like literally cuts Buck Henry's forehead during the sketch. And, you know, you see Buck like hold his hand up to his forehead and he's like, oh, whatever. And he is just such a pro. He goes through the rest of the sketch, but he is bleeding on his forehead. And there's some fun anecdotes in the middle about it. And it's really like one of the first instances of like, you know, something going really wrong during a Saturday Night Live sketch, but he pulls it off really well. And then throughout the episode, you start to see him wearing bandages in all of his sketches, because
like gigantic bandage too.
100%.
Yeah. Not just a small bandaid. It was a gigantic bandage.
Yeah, and it was so funny to watch because obviously aspect of live television, and then you get this great moment in the Good Nights of that episode where the entire cast comes out with bandages on their heads to show camaraderie with Buck Henry. And to me, this is like, you know, really just culminates in a great example of Buck and the cast just fitting in so well with each other. They all loved Buck Henry, and it was just, it was so fun.
Good evening, I'm Chevy Chase, and you're Rod McCune. Our top story tonight, Buck Henry cuts himself in the forehead in a sketch on the Saturday Night Show. As a far gone and downed and drugged out John Belushi hits him with a sword.
That was just the cast telling Buck that we love you and you're one of us. And who knows if that would have been a different host, like maybe they would have thought that that was a, that would have been a weird incident all the same, but maybe we wouldn't have seen that sort of connection, that through line throughout the rest of the episode.
Like if Chevy was hosting and he got cut in the forehead, I bet nobody would be wearing bandages.
Nobody would have cared. Bill Murray would have probably tried to make it worse or something.
Right.
Yeah. So that was a very famous SNL moment. A lot of people probably know about that moment, but don't necessarily, you know, attach it to Buck Henry, but it should be attached to Buck Henry because you're right. That was an example of just the cast loving him. So we move on. He hosted the season finale of season two.
Can I just say before we get there, he also did Mardi Gras during that particular season, which is non-canonical, but it's still part of Saturday Night Live. It was a big deal where, you know, if you don't know about this, Lorne and NBC took the entire SNL cast down to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. And there was a really crazy episode where Jane Curtin and Buck Henry hosted Weekend Update during that episode. And Jane always tells this story about how the fans were so rabid during that episode that while Buck Henry and Jane Curtin were doing Weekend Update, people were climbing the set to try and jump on to the Weekend Update set during that episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, even then, Buck Henry was sort of a pseudo host of that episode as well. And it was just a fun moment during season two.
Would you consider that New Orleans show a success or a failure, or like what do you make of that New Orleans show?
I don't know. That's a great question. I think if I had to pick one, I'd say probably a failure. Like I don't think it was a great episode of SNL. I think that they would never do anything like that again for fans. You know, 40 years later, 45 years later, is it fun to look back on? Yeah, absolutely. So I would say more failure than success, but success as a viewer.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think they've said as much that they wouldn't never try anything like that again. They like the contained environment that they can control,
for sure.
Probably for the best. So he did host the season finale of season two, did more samurai stuff with John Belushi. Something that really occurred to me during this stretch of his hosting gig was a lot of the, I guess, some of the cringe humor that Buck seemed to be okay with, or kind of started appearing maybe around this time. Do you remember the I have Stunt Baby?
Will you shut up? You little brat! You're driving me nuts! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up! Cut! Good. Okay, bring in the Stunt Baby, okay?
What do you think about the Stunt Baby? And then, of course, there was the follow-up that you might get to as well.
Yeah, there was, I do remember the Stunt Baby. I do remember, you know, like a lot of the, you know, people were surprised about him with the baby and stuff like that, and the baby being thrown around everywhere and all that stuff. But, you know, the answer to this part of our discussion really is that there are some wonderful anecdotes about Buck Henry at this time, which was they always wanted Buck to host the finales because they would have hosts that would come in during the season who wouldn't want to do certain sketches. And then they would hold them because Buck would do anything. He always said, give me anything when he came in, or give me whatever anybody else didn't want to do, and I will do that sketch. And he was so comfortable at the time, that's what it ended up being. And because of that, we got these like sort of, I guess, like, you know, cringy-esque sketches towards the end of the season that had shock value. And some of them were like, definitely would not play now.
Sure.
But they, you know, it was just fun because Buck, like I said, would do anything. And I think that was what was great about it.
And that was you said that was a reason, one of the reasons why they kind of went to him as the host for season finales.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it was a coincidence. I noticed a pattern rewatching his episodes, and I don't think it was a coincidence that during Buck Henry episodes, Michael O'Donohue was allowed to end the episodes with his bits where he would say, you know, what would it be like if the Mormon Tabernacle Choir had long nails shoved into their eyes? It might go something like this. And then it would just be Michael O'Donohue screaming and rolling around on the floor. And then Buck Henry would come out and say goodnight. And looking now that you say that Buck Henry would do anything, I don't think it's a coincidence that during the episodes that Buck Henry hosted, that Michael O'Donohue was given that space at the end of the show to do his thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, he created an environment where people can have fun and play on his episodes. He never had to make it all about Buck, but he was just, like we said, the great MC that would guide the evening. And there was a place for O'Donohue definitely in the Buck Henry episodes.
Yeah, definitely. And talking about guiding the evening, there was another somewhat famous episode. It was in season 3, episode 6. They did the Anyone Can Host contest. And I think, well, first of all, you know, looking when you first watched these episodes, you as a new viewer, like, what did you think about that format and that concept of Anyone Can Host?
This was the most exciting thing that I never knew had happened, but when I saw it for the first time, I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. I couldn't imagine SNL ever allowing somebody just coming off the street, figuratively, to host SNL. And it was so cool. They had done the home movies thing prior, where they discovered Walter Williams and Mr. Bill, where people would send in their home movies and stuff and have them a part of the show. But the fact that, like, you know, Thomas, like, you or I could host, like, what? You know, that's crazy. And obviously for them, you know, part of the condition or part of the way that this was going to happen was Buck Henry was going to be there as the, you know, the MC, the coordinator, to get us through this, you know, final voting and the episode itself, where we had Mescal Spillman, which I'm sure we'll, you know, in the Mescal Spillman nominated SNL Hall of Fame episode, we'll talk a lot more about. But yes, in his fifth hosting stint, they used it as an opportunity to bring out the five finalists for the Anyone Can Host competition. And Buck was there to introduce them to the audience, get them to say, you know, a one line or whatever it was. And that was so much fun to me. It was one of my favorite things that I've ever seen on SNL.
Yeah. And I actually wouldn't be opposed to them doing something like that again. I know on a recent episode on the SNL network, you guys had talked about that a little bit, of like, what if we just had like open auditions for the general public, whatever. So this was kind of something similar that I actually think would be a fun idea to this day.
For sure. I would love it. I would advocate for it. I have told people who work at NBC that they should do this again, but yeah, you know, they're not going to listen to all my suggestions.
And as this relates to Buck Henry, I think this is another example of just how much trust the show had in Buck at this point. There's not a lot of hosts around that time who I think would have been trusted to kind of steer the ship like that. Like, you know, they're hosting a show that's not all about them. They're kind of like doing some sketches. Of course, he did like Stunt Baby. He did Samurai, a Samurai sketch in that episode. But really, that show was about, a lot of it, the through line was guiding these Anyone Can Host contestants through the process. And I don't know that, I can't imagine anybody else really other than Buck being trusted to be like the MC, as you put it, to do something like that.
The only other person who I think could do this, well, there's a couple people. I would say Candy Bergen would be one, mm-hmm. maybe, that I would see. And then I think Steve could have done this as well. But really, to me, Buck was the ultimate first choice as somebody who was going to guide them through it. And, you know, Buck always hosted earlier in the season and then hosted the finale. I feel like it was, you know, strategic. The time when they chose Buck to host was going to be the time that they were going to introduce the finalists to the audience.
Right. And we're making a Hall of Fame case. And think about the names that you just put him with, like Steve Martin, who is an SNL Hall of Famer. He was inducted in season one. A lot of people thought he was a cast member. I certainly did. For when I was younger, I thought he was a cast member. And then Candy Bergen, who's a five-timer, who was a trusted host. So you're putting Buck Henry in the class with them. That kind of already tells you how esteemed of an SNL figure he is. So Buck Henry's last episode, he hosted on May 24th, 1980. And that was a huge episode just in SNL history. That was almost pretty much the official end of, number one, the original cast, the original Not Ready for Primetime players. And number two, the first Lorne Michaels stint. So it was appropriate that Buck hosted, I think, that last episode, basically of that era. And he never hosted again. Do you think that's a coincidence or not? What do you make of Buck never hosting after that last episode?
So Buck Henry, so first of all, yeah, let's just say, you know, the end of the era ends with Buck Henry there. I think that is a very important point, that he's there to really wrap up. You know, it's the last time we're going to see Jane Curtin, Gilda Radner on Saturday Night Live. You know, we're not going to see Garrett Morris again till like 2002, where he like pops up in a Brittany Murphy episode. You know, like a lot of these people who were at the show for the first 5 years, like you're never going to see them on SNL again. And he's there to kind of put the stamp on that last 5 years. And I think it's a perfect way to wrap up, because I always said the first 5 years of SNL could be their own show. Like, it's really like as compact of an era as you're going to find. There's no transition point over from, you know, the beginning naturally, because it just, that's when the show started. Then the end, there's no season six cast members that are, you know, coming into season five. It is as closed off as of an era as you possibly can have. So the show could have ended there, and it would have been a great show. And it would have been just a 5-year show that happened in the 70s. So there's that. And I think Buck was the perfect way to end that era of the show. But I will say a couple things. Number one, 1981, season six of the show, there was a lot of turmoil and changes and cast changes that end up happening. Dick Ebersole ends up taking over the show. You know, Al Franken, you know, is getting started to talk about, you know, what's his relationship with the show, how what's going to happen after Gene Dumanian's cast sort of like doesn't really pan out. And then we get, you know, these weird couple episodes towards the end of the season. And then there's a writer strike in 1981. And there was these planned episodes that were going to be happening that were very original cast esque. Tom Davis and Al Franken were going to host an episode together.
Oh.
Buck Henry was going to host a show in season six. So that would have been his 11th hosting appearance, but that was canceled due to a writer's strike.
Wow. So, okay. I guess I had just assumed that maybe he felt some sort of overt loyalty to Lorne Michaels.
Did.
And not to say that he didn't, but I guess I didn't realize that he was going to actually, he was kind of slated to come back. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, he definitely did feel a loyalty to Lorne. And I think that, you know, he would have just come in because there was a lot of like the people who were there for the first 5 years who were starting to like come back a little bit that following year. They didn't know what the show was going to look like. And I think ultimately the writer's strike gave him the opportunity to pivot and then, you know, hire different people for season seven. But he would have been there. That would have been fascinating to see what that episode would have been, to have like an Eddie Murphy and Buck Henry sketch, or Joe Piscopo and Buck Henry sketch. That would have been interesting to see how that would have worked out. And then Buck Henry would end up being a cast member of the new show, which was a show that Lorne Michaels did in 1984, right before he came back to Saturday Night Live, where he was there. And this was a show that they had many people from Saturday Night Live come on, different hosts. It was very similar. Steve Martin was a host of that show a few times. John Candy, Gilda Radner was a host of that show. Like, there's so many SNL connections that would happen that was like very closely related to SNL in a way. So if you ever want to go back and watch some older Buck Henry stuff, there's that. And then, of course, there's the 15th anniversary of the show, which is really the last time you see Buck Henry in anything Saturday Night Live related. And that's the time where we get this very funny moment with Buck Henry and Steve Martin, where they're talking about who's hosted the most times and who's the leader of the clubhouse at that point. Because in May of 1989, Steve Martin actually broke Buck Henry's record for hosting, which he would hold all the way until Alec Baldwin would break it again down the road. But the original Alec Baldwin Steve Martin fight for hosting was Buck Henry versus Steve Martin, and it's a really funny moment from the 15th anniversary. Non-canonical, but still really fun.
Yeah, and I urge every listener to go back and check out those, like the 15th anniversary, of course the 40th, and of all those types of celebrations that SNL has had. And yeah, great to see people like Buck Henry coming back. And he was in kind of an SNL-related thing in 30 Rock. That was one of his, like, one of the kind of the few things that he did, I guess, post-1985 or something. He played Liz Lemon's father, Dick Lemon, in I think maybe a couple of episodes of 30 Rock. But I like to think that that was Tina Fey's way of paying homage to maybe, like, old SNL legend, essentially.
100%. She's mentioned that she was a huge fan of Buck Henry on Saturday Night Live, so she wanted to include him in 30 Rock. And for me, like, that was always like one of my biggest questions that I always had when I was going through my rewatch was, it seems that Buck Henry continued to have great relationships with people who are closely connected to the show. How come Buck never hosted again? I don't know. I think if I was ever to sit down with Lorne Michaels, I would probably be one of the questions I'd love to ask him is, how come Buck Henry never came back to host the show again? At the SNL Network, we did an interview with Keith Raywood, who's one of the production designers of Saturday Night Live, and we talked about the Five Timers Club, in which Buck Henry is the first member ever of the Five Timers Club, even though it wasn't really like a thing back then. He technically is. And he's also the only member of the Five Timers Club as of this recording who's not with us anymore. And I said to him, you know, this past season when John Mulaney had his Five Timers Club sketch, how come there was no Buck Henry memorabilia somewhere, a picture of him? And he was like, that is a great idea, and I don't know why I didn't think of it. So if you do see a Buck Henry picture on the next Five Timers Club set, I'll take a little bit of credit for that.
No, we'll give you like pretty much full credit for that. Definitely. Yeah, that's something that I would love to see. Are there any other sketches or moments that you didn't think we didn't cover that deserve acknowledgement?
I will just say, like, if you think of all the major sketches in the first 5 years, Coneheads, The Nerds, like all of the, Lord and Lady Douchebag, I think these are like fun sketches that a lot of people talk about.
Lord and Lady Douchebag. So frightfully glad you two could come. I was just asking Lady Southberry, where the devil are those douchebags?
You know, Buck Henry was like pretty much as a part of the first 5 years as you can imagine. It was just, you know, like, for me, we're talking Hall of Fame cases, absolute 100% first ballot Hall of Famer for me for the first 5 years of the show. You know, when we're talking about other hosts, there have been amazing hosts of the show who have come along afterwards, you know, in different eras, Alec, John Goodman, Tom Hanks, but, you know, Timberlake, there's so many great ones. But for me, like, he still holds up. Like, I don't know if you're ready for me to make my like final case. You let me know.
Yeah, we were kind of leading into that you, so you can make your final case now. Yeah, definitely.
All right. I mean, for me, like let's talk statistics for a second, which I love to do. For me, he is the fifth most appeared host in the history of the show in terms of sketch appearances. He was actually only passed by Tom Hanks this year, this past season 47. So he was the fourth up until this point. So he's top five: Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, John Goodman, Tom Hanks, and Buck Henry. And we're talking about a guy who did not appear on the show technically after 1980. So you can only imagine, had he appeared on the show after, what he would have done. But just looking at his career, like I said, Swiss Army Knife involved in every single possible sketch you can imagine. I don't think that the first 5 years of the show are as successful without Buck Henry. And I think that if the first 5 years of the show are not that successful, alternate universe, I have to wonder, you know, what would have happened to the show long term. So I think Buck Henry to me is like the Johnny Unitas of like for the NFL, you know, you're talking about, you know, or like even the, like in a way like a Babe Ruth, the baseball, like, you know, people who are like legends of past eras that you have to wonder like how they would play in these eras. But to me, like, he has the stats, he has the material. I think Buck Henry, for me, is a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame as far as the host category is concerned. I think he should be given an honorary pass into the Hall of Fame because he's just that good. And I would be very interested to find an argument about why you couldn't put him in there besides name recognition.
All right. Thank you so much, John.
That was our very own Thomas Senna in conversation with John Schneider from SNN. If you are not tuning in to SNN on YouTube for their hot take show or their Monday roundtables, well, I don't know what to say. Get cracking and get over there. If you're a fan of SNL, you got to check this place out. And I'm sure you already have. Let's now kick it to the, it's not going to be a sketch today. Normally, right now, we do the sketch where we cement it in. But today, we are going with an interesting bit of SNL history. This is the last show of the original Lorne era, and they knew the show was going to essentially start over. And it's interesting that this is the subject of the monologue. So this is Buck Henry's monologue, and it shows off his dry sense of humor and, the chops that it takes to write a great monologue. So let's go to that right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Buck Henry!
It is wonderful to be back again. You know, this is the 106th Saturday Night Live program. Yes. And it is the 103rd time that I've hosted. You know, I've always hosted the last show of the year, and this is the last show of the year. Some people, in fact, think it might be the last Saturday Night show ever. But don't worry. Because I'm here to announce that Saturday Night Live will be back again next year. Not with the same people, of course, but with an entirely new cast of young, fresh, talented people to replace the ones who were let go. And I'm sure that these new kids are going to grow on you because they're the cream of the crop of hundreds who auditioned for the former producer. And I really look forward to working with them and the new producer in the years ahead. So let's meet these bright and funny newcomers. First, from Midland, Texas, Lucy Lawler. They're going to be calling you the sweetheart of Saturday Night Live pretty soon, Lucy.
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a little nervous.
That's all right. It's understandable. Gilda Radner was just as nervous when she first stepped out here 5 years ago. I helped her, and I'll help you too, if you know what I mean.
Well, thank you, Mr. Henry.
You call me Buck from now on.
Okay, Buck. Okay.
Now, here's a guy who, besides being a fine comedian, plays many, many musical instruments. Welcome, Gary Lipton. Just how many musical instruments do you actually play?
Well, I can get a sound out of about 20 instruments.
That's fantastic. Okay, next, a really funny lady, originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's Norma Jenkins. Have you done much television before, Norma?
Just a local show in Cincinnati, but it was on the same station that Mike Douglas started on.
Hey, well, that's good enough for us. I say bye-bye, Garrett Morris. Hello, Norma.
All right.
Now, it's time to meet a former member of a fabulous comedy team, and his name is Lee Mamon. How are you doing, Lee?
Lee, I understand you used to be a former member of a comedy team.
That's right, Buck. It was called Holman and Maiman.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember our William Tell bit.
Lee Maiman, everybody. Okay. Now, let's meet a guy who bills himself as the walking loony bin. That's what it says, anyway. Let's meet Carl Quackenbush. Well, Carl, are you going to be the next Bill Murray?
I certainly hope not.
I certainly hope not. If that's the kind of comedy we can expect from this guy, I think we're in for some big belly laughs this fall. Okay, folks, let's meet Robin Schermerhorn. Robin. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, it's Schermerhorn.
Well, thank you, Robin. Okay. And last. Last, folks, but not least, here's Ron Waldo. Yay! Hello. Now, Ron, they say you do a great imitation of Don Pardo.
That's right, Buck.
It's Saturday Night Live!
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. How about a big hand for these stars of the future? All of them, all of these kids are going to be spending the summer at NBC's comedy camp in upstate New York, studying assiduously under the supervision of NBC's Dean of Comedy Workshops, Mr. John Barber. So, these kids will be back in the fall, but we'll be right back.
All right, that was terrific. I'm real glad we got a chance to hear that. And I got to say, Buck Henry, I think this guy is bound for the SNL Hall of Fame. Don't you think? I can't say for sure that, you know, it was a long time ago, so I'm not sure that he'll make it on the first ballot because it seems like the voting skews in a certain demographic or a certain age cohort. And it's not the cohort that Buck Henry belongs to, but there's no doubt in my mind that ultimately he has his plaque in the SNL Hall of Fame. And I'm excited for that. I think that's real cool. So again, I want to thank John Schneider. I want to thank Matt Ardill, and I want to thank Thomas Senna. We always have a terrific time here on the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. That's what I've got for you this week. But do me one favor on your way out as you pass the weekend update exhibit. Turn out the lights because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Doug DeNance saying, see you next week.
Podcasts and such.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.